Welcome back. This past Thursday, sad story. Chicago police officer was tragically shot and killed by a fellow officer during a tactical operation. Officer Crystal Rivera, 36, was a single mother with 4 years on the force. She was shot in the back and died. Just a very, very sad case. And the facts are coming in. We don't know everything yet. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the legalities of this from a person who is really uniquely situated to talk about it. Dan Herbert with the law office, Herbert Law Firm, is really the best person to do this. He's a former police officer and a Cook County prosecutor. He represents, among other clients, police officers in criminal and civil matters. He represented the former Chicago public Chicago Police Department officer Jason Van Dyke in the shooting of Laquan McDonald several years ago. Dan, thank you for coming on the show again. How are you?
Good, Karen. Thanks for having me on.
It's a sad day when we see that. It was actually the first Chicago police officer this year to be killed in the line of duty. What do you think? I mean, you're a former police officer yourself. You were a prosecutor. You defend police officers and among other people. What do you think and feel when you see a story like this?
Well, it's a horrible, horrible tragedy. And, you know, I feel for certainly the officer and her family. I also feel especially bad for the officer that was involved in the bullet that killed one of his partners. You know, he or she is going to have to live with that for the rest of their lives. And I feel sad for the police department. It sounds like she was an excellent police officer, and they certainly were putting themselves into dangerous position by going after, it sounds like a pretty bad person with a weapon, and going into a house that sounds like it was a pretty bad place. You know, they found.
But yeah, tell us a little bit about what we know from so far. I mean, we don't know everything, of course, but from the news reports, what do you see happened here, Dan?
Yeah, I am taking this just from the news reports and kind of, you know, filling in some blanks just based upon my experience with it. But it looks like they're working a tactical team, which is plain clothes. However, it's pretty obvious and notorious that these are police officers in well-policed areas, certainly. There's no question about it. But they saw an individual walking down the street, believed he had a weapon for whatever reason, attempted to put a street stop on that person, which is basically just pulling up and telling him to come over, and that individual took off, and he ran right into a building, and that's the building that appears to be what is commonly known as a drug house, where, you know, people are not necessarily living there; they're conducting business out of there. They ran after this individual, which, you know, is what they're supposed to do. They must have seen the weapon or something that was pretty obvious that indicated that they had a weapon. They chased in after this individual, and another individual was in the apartment pointing a weapon at him. And I guess he jumped over a couch and found a way to escape from the apartment with this weapon, an AK-47, I believe it was. And it looks like they were given chase down the hall, and one of the officers fired, and it struck Officer Rivera, the deceased, in the back. So we don't know how exactly that happened. You know, the first thought that jumps into mind is that Officer Rivera was in front of the officer that fired, but it could have been even, you know, the individual went into a different hallway where police officers were outside there trying to, like, block his escape. So just a horrible, horrible, tragic situation
all the way around. So what happens now as far as the investigation? Who investigates, and how do they go about trying to figure out what happened?
Well, the Chicago Police Department, they have deferred all their police shooting investigations to the COPA, Chicago Office of Professional Accountability. They will conduct an investigation. The police department will also conduct an investigation, because it's not merely a officer involved shooting and death. It's also a criminal prosecution against at least two individuals, from what I've seen. So essentially, COPPA will investigate the shooting, and the police department will investigate the criminal activity that led to the shooting.
So, because a police officer was killed, or anyone was killed in a crime like this, might there be a felony murder charge? And if so, can you tell our listeners what that means?
Yeah, but felony murder is essentially when it's any first-degree murder, which certainly was the case here, but it kind of takes away the intent element, and it's any felonies. It's any shooting that occurs during the commission of a forcible felony. And if this individual, obviously he didn't shoot at the police officer, a partner shot at them, but the offender can be charged because the commission of the act of killing Officer Rivera was based upon the suspect committing a forcible felony, which there's a number of forcible felonies, but there's kind of a broad one which basically says that if there's any use or threat of physical force, that qualifies as forcible felony. So it meets the elements for felony murder.
So even if these individuals didn't actually shoot the gun, because Officer Rivera died, even if it was friendly fire, they could be charged with that murder, which makes it very, very serious.
Actually, they're liable for the act of the shooting because they were involved in these crimes that the legislature has determined are serious enough and threatening enough that anything that results as a result of creating this dangerous situation, it kind of falls on the people that created the situation.
Absolutely. We're talking to Dan Herbert, Herbert Law Offices. We're talking about the very tragic case of the killing of a police officer this week, Crystal Rivera. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about what happens next as far as legalities go in the police department. If you have any questions or comments here, you can give us a call or a text at 312-981-7200. Attorney and former police officer Dan Herbert of the Herbert Law Firm. Dan, let's talk a little bit about the protocol when you are... First of all, I want to ask you, you were saying that this was a plainclothes operation, or that's what we believe. So if that's the case, is it more dangerous to be in plainclothes as a police officer than if you're in your uniform?
Theoretically, it is, but in some of these high crime areas, like I said, the officers in plain clothes are just as obvious as an officer in a police uniform. Nowadays, all the tactical officers, you know, they're wearing vests with the star embroidered on it. They have police in large letters in the back of their vest. You know, when I was tactical officer, you know, half of us didn't even wear vests. We were much more, a little more undercover. But the cars that they drive in can be spotted from blocks away.
Interesting.
Pretty obvious.
So, and we got some texters who have some questions, and I'm going to get to all of these about whether the police officer who fired may be under some sort of criminal or civil liability. Certainly, I want to get to that, but let's just take this from the beginning. So, if someone pulls out a gun, and in this case, I think it was a pretty significant weapon, an AK. What was it? What kind was it, Dan? Did you know?
47, I believe.
Okay, so that's a pretty powerful weapon, right? You pull that out. What force can a police officer use at that point? And at what point can that person shoot?
Yeah, deadly force is authorized. It's when a police officer has a reasonable belief that they or somebody else is likely of receiving death or great bodily harm, which is gaping wounds and broken bones, and certainly pointing a gun, no less an AK-47, which is automatic. And I don't know much about guns, but they have very large capacities, and they're automatic and can fire a lot of bullets at a rapid pace. So certainly somebody pointing that weapon at a police officer, there is no question that the police had the right to use deadly force in that situation.
So let's just say the person points the gun and then decides, I'm not going to shoot, I'm going to run. And maybe that's what happened here. We don't know. We're probably not going to know this for a while. So what does a police officer have a right to do at that point when the person is actually running away with this very deadly weapon?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on what the police officer that shot, what they believed happened, and whether or not their belief was reasonable. So I don't know if the police officer believed that that this individual may have fired at police, which certainly makes him more of a looming danger. But irrespective of that, just this individual that's running through an apartment building, you know, I don't know if there was other people in the building. I don't know if there were police on the outside. He may have believed that this individual was likely to cause death or great bodily harm to somebody that was in front of him or somebody that was behind him, because, you know, individuals can turn so quickly while they're running and fire off a couple of rounds and kill the police officer. So, I mean, clearly this individual had a very powerful weapon, was in a dangerous apartment, and was running from police. They at that point, they believed that this individual was a threat. And then there's also that fleeing felon law, which, you know, I've argued a bunch of times, and I certainly made the argument in the Van Dyke case. And it seems like nobody is really focusing on that law. However, it is still on the books. But essentially, police officers are allowed to use deadly force if somebody is running away from them, if they can articulate a reason that they believe this person is a threat to somebody. There's three different factors. And so, I mean, here, I believe that the state's attorney's office will definitely have a conversation about criminal charges against the police officer. I think it'll be a very quick conversation, and they will decide not to charge. But, you know, certainly somebody was killed. They were killed by a police officer's gun. There certainly could be criminal charges, but in this case, I think it'll be quick. There is a kind of a trend going on in criminal cases with police officers where they call it like the officer-created jeopardy, where sometimes different prosecuting agencies are charging police officers criminally if they unnecessarily increase the risk of the situation. Here, from what I've read, I think it'll be a very short conversation, and no criminal charges will be brought against the shooting police officer or anyone else.
So, and, you know, I guess from a standpoint, you know, you represented Jason Van Dyke in the Laquan McDonald shooting, which was very high profile. It was watched across the country. And, you know, you deal with these issues. You've dealt with them as a police officer. How are you trained to know when exactly to use deadly force? Because it seems to me that you know, when someone points a gun at you, you know, you're a police officer. That was stupid to do it. The person's ready to shoot you, maybe even your coworkers. And yet, are you still worried that you're going to be sued? Are you worried that you're going to be criminally charged? Is that preventing police officers from defending themselves, that belief that they might be charged?
Yeah, well, it is bright line as far as the seminal United States Supreme Court case as to when a police officer can use deadly force, and the standard is when they reasonably believe that they are in danger of receiving a battery that can involve death or great bodily harm or somebody else. And the Supreme Court talked in that case that that they don't focus on hindsight. In other words, if it was reasonable in that situation. As far as the training goes, the training has gotten much better. But when I said it's kind of a bright line in the law. It's anything but a bright line in reality. And, you know, they do a very nice job of training and putting individuals in countless situations, in real-life situations, And it's basically, did you have a reasonable belief here to use deadly force? And, you know, it's up to that police officer to explain what they were experiencing when they use the deadly force. And sometimes it doesn't look reasonable to somebody watching it on a video in the comfort of their living room. But, you know, that again, that's not the standard that's used. It's would a reasonable police officer have felt the same fear that you felt when you fired that weapon?
It just seems so not bright line. You know, it just seems like...
Yeah, it is arbitrary to a certain extent.
You know, especially when you're talking about 12 jurors who you don't know. You know, what are they going to think? And are they going to Monday morning quarterback it? You know, and I guess I'm just so inclined to say if I'm in that uniform and someone has a gun, it's going to be him, not me. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah, and you know, Karen, you're an excellent lawyer, but we have to convince the trier of fact to look at it from the proper perspective, not the perspective that we as civilians would have. It's you have to include all the facts in there and all the elements, and you need to put that trier of fact in as close as possible to the position of the police officer to use force. And it is difficult, and it does scare police officers. As far as you know, their biggest fear is getting shot, not coming home to their family. Their second fear is to have criminal charges placed against them.
Absolutely. So let's talk about civil liability. Let's just say that Officer Rivera's family, you know, wanted to bring a lawsuit for negligence against the officer who shot her. Let's just say we're just speculating here, but you know, she did have a young daughter, and you know, maybe this is something that is important to her family. So, if that's the case, how does that work, and what are the standards, and who defends the case, and who pays whatever judgment or settlement?
Yeah, I have a case that is somewhat similar. It's pending right now. It was a young woman that was shot in a nightclub by a security guard, and in that case, we filed suit, and there would you know there's some. Rather deep pockets that we could utilize in this case. With a municipality such as City of Chicago, there is tort immunity, which basically it will prevent a plaintiff from prevailing in any lawsuit if the officers were acting within good faith and were acting within the scope of their duty. So she could bring a negligence claim, her family obviously, and they can, they would certainly name the police department as a defendant, and in that way, they would need to either put in some type of Monell claim, a past practice where they didn't train these officers properly, they allowed them to go into dangerous situations. From what I know, it does not sound like these officers, maybe they chased them into an area that was dangerous, but it doesn't sound like anything they did was acting outside of their scope of duty or good faith. If the police officers, just to make an absurd example, but if they were going in there to, say, rip off a dope house and this same scenario played out, then certainly that would be a classic example of not acting within the scope of duty.
Understood. Dan Herbert, thank you so much for joining us. And your Herbert's a law firm. How can people reach you?
They can call the office, 312-655-7660.
Thank you so much. Yeah, absolutely. Good to talk to you. Hopefully I'll see you around in court, which I usually do at some point. Less so since COVID. But anyway, take care. Have a great summer. Yeah.